So do you know who you will vote for in the race for Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice? The incumbent Justice Patience Rogensack is running for another 10-year term on the state's high court. Her challenger in the April 2nd election is Ed Falone, a Marquette University law professor. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, March 18th. You will hear from both candidates during this hour, starting with Justice Rogensack right now, followed by Professor Falone after 7:30. And we will welcome your questions for both of our candidates at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us on Twitter at Joy Cardine Show. Patience Rogensack is the incumbent candidate for Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice. She was elected to the Supreme Court in 2003. Prior to that, she was elected twice to the Wisconsin Court of Appeals, and she joins us in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
So why should voters reelect you to serve another 10-year term on the Wisconsin Supreme Court?
Well, first of all, I want to tell the voters that I am listed on the ballot as Pat Rogensack rather than Patience Rogensack, just so there's no confusion on their behalf. I think they should elect me for another term because I have the better experience to do the work of a Supreme Court justice. You know, about 80% of my time as a justice is spent deciding whether another judge or another court correctly applied the law. And I am able to do that because I know where the problems may be. I know where to look. I know what kind of standards of review the prior court or the prior judge should have used. And in that way, I can give the public a much more thorough review of the cases that come forward to the Supreme Court. So judicial experience, well, the Constitution doesn't require it. It requires a bare minimum of 5 years license to practice law in the state of Wisconsin immediately preceding election or appointment. Judicial experience is really, really very significant in actually doing the work and giving the cases that come forward the thorough review they deserve.
Yeah. I'll call you Pat from now on.
Thank you.
Patience is such a wonderful name, though, especially for a judge, don't you think?
Yeah, well, you know, my maiden name was Drake, and my dad was of English extraction, and Patience Drake is not such an odd name, but when you put it with Rogensack, it's quite a mouthful.
Yeah. All right, so our guest is Supreme Court Justice Pat Rogensack. She is running for re-election. We welcome your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Well, besides experience, what do you think is the most important issue in this race?
Well, I think judicial philosophy is also very important. You know, my philosophy is really set by the Wisconsin Constitution, and the way in which I review cases always shows a respect for the other branches of government because each of the three branches has some powers that are constitutionally delegated. And, for example, the Constitution says that the legislative power of the state shall reside in the Senate and in the Assembly. And, of course, I don't belong to either one of those groups, yet I often interpret laws that they have passed, enacted, and how I interpret those will show the respect that I have for the choices that the legislature has made on a policy basis for the people of Wisconsin.
We had a questioner on Facebook, Gary on Facebook, who wants me to ask both you and Professor Falone the same question. Please ask your guests how Attorney General Van Hollen and Attorney Lester Pines can have such widely different interpretations of Judge Colas's decision regarding Act 10. Ask them if, in their opinion, constitutional protections should be interpreted in favor of the rights of the individual or the economic interest of the state.
Well, I think you'd probably have to ask those two men why their opinions differ so much. But I can tell you that when any challenge comes to the court based on a constitutional claim, it reaches the court with the presumption that the statute is constitutional. So that's where the courts always begin. I have no knowledge of how that question that's pending should come out. And even if I did, I wouldn't talk with you about it because it may well come before the Supreme Court. So while I understand very much your listeners' interest and concern, it isn't really something that's appropriate to discuss.
Without going into details of a case that could come before the Wisconsin Supreme Court, can you help us understand why, you know, so many times you'll hear that there was a 4-3 decision. How can, you know, people be so split on interpreting various laws that come before them?
Well, you know, that is a misperception. Last year we did either 58 or 59 cases. Out of all of those cases, only four were 4-3 cases. Of those four, only three were what has been characterized as the conservative majority and the more liberal minority. So, you know, what you read in the newspaper may be interesting stories, but it really is not supported by the facts.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to ask this question anyway, even though I suspect I know your answer. Last Friday on my Week in Review program, our conservative commentator David Blaska said regarding this particular race, if you want Act 10 to be upheld, vote for Justice Rogensack. If you want Act 10 to be overturned, you vote for Ed Falone. Is he right?
You know, that's his opinion. I have not studied Act 10, so I couldn't begin to tell you. I know it's a very complicated case, and we'll have complicated issues. And if it comes before the court, and I'm on the court, of course I will decide it. But that's about as best I can do for you.
Linda on Facebook says, I'd like to know where Justice Rogensack's funding is coming from for her television advertisements. Is she accepting money from out-of-state corporations?
Well, I think she can look at where my money's coming from in my financial reports. I have to tell you, I have absolutely no dealings with the money that comes into my campaign. I have a compliance committee who accepts the contributions that comes in, first checks to be sure that those contributions are lawful contributions for the campaign to accept. But if she wants to know where the money's come from, everything is posted that I've received. But I can't begin to tell her because I have no involvement. I don't sign the statements, and I don't deal with the money.
Yeah. She goes on to say, is how much money is being filtered by Club for Growth-type organizations? Is it all right, do you think, for a justice for Supreme Court to be to accept money from political organizations?
Okay, you can't. You can accept money from registered political action committees, and they have a number. They're registered with the Government Accountability Board. Independent expenditures by groups such as Club for Growth do not contribute to the candidate. They run independent ads if they choose to, but they're not contributing to the candidate. And you have absolutely nothing to say about whether they run an ad, don't run an ad, what they say and what they don't say. You know, as you know, I have run a very positive campaign, and that's what I've done every single election that I've been up for. I want to tell the voters what qualities, what experience I have, and I hope with that persuade them that my experience is the better experience to do the work of a Supreme Court justice.
Pat on Facebook asks, why does Justice Rogensack approve of the ruling that allows justices to decide for themselves if they should be recused or whether they should recuse themselves from a case when a large contributor to their campaigns is a party in the case, or if they have another connection that would be a conflict of interest?
Well, first of all, that's been the rule in the state of Wisconsin for as long as I've been a judge, and that's back to 1996. You can make a motion to request that a justice remove himself or herself from a case based on a contribution if you choose to do that. And in fact, such a motion was brought against Justice Butler because he received actually a contribution from Lester Pines, somebody that you brought up, and Lester then had a case pending. Also, he received contributions from board members of an organization that had a case pending. And after the case was decided, opposite those contributors or in favor of those contributors, there was a motion made that he should have been disqualified by law. Now, there was never a claim that Justice Butler did anything inappropriate. It was just that because he'd received any kind of a contribution. And one of the things the court looked at is whether he considered whether he could be fair and impartial. You are required to do that under the statute. And the court determined that simply accepting a lawful contribution with nothing more was really not sufficient grounds to require the justice to remove himself or herself. Now, that doesn't mean that a justice couldn't choose to do so if the justice decided to.
Our guest is Justice Pat Rogensack. She is the incumbent candidate for Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice. The spring general election is just 2 weeks away now, and we are hosting a candidate forum this hour with Justice Rogensack during this half hour, with her challenger, law professor Ed Filone, after 7:30. We'll continue these candidate forums as well tomorrow morning. The state superintendent of public instruction, Tony Evers, will join us at 7 o'clock until 7:30, and his challenger, state representative Don Pridemore, will join us from 7:30 to 8. If you have a question for Justice Rogensack, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, about 20 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, March 18th, talking with Supreme Court Justice Pat Rogensack during this half hour about her campaign for state Supreme Court Justice. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Before we go to the phones, Justice Rogensack, your challenger, Ed Filone, says that he should be elected to the Supreme Court in part because the Supreme Court needs change. It needs a calming influence, perhaps. He says that it's dysfunctional. We've all read about this incident where there was a physical confrontation between two of the Supreme Court justices. Is the Supreme Court dysfunctional?
Well, first of all, the Supreme Court is not up for election. One justice is up for election. So the comments that the court is dysfunctional are unfortunate. They're a type of negative campaigning that I frankly don't approve of. And it really heaps further injury on the court as an institution. You know, what happened between Justice Bradley and Justice Prosser is heartbreaking for anyone who cares about that institution. And what he is doing in this campaign is constantly creating more injury to the court. Now, secondly, the court, he really misperceives differences of opinion from dysfunction. And I think that you can see from the little conversation we had before that the Supreme Court justices agree with one another much more than they disagree with one another in the opinions they put out. We are doing our work. We are writing fine opinions. We are improving the way in which we meet the public's needs, both in regard to how we handle the finances of the court, in regard to getting our opinions out more timely. So the court is moving forward. It is trying to become more responsive to the needs of the public. So I don't think that the court is dysfunctional. I think because he's never been a judge, I understand his confusion. But just because justices feel strongly about different legal issues, that's very natural. You know, being a Supreme Court justice is not a team sport. We are independently elected, and we are supposed to use our independent judgment on every legal issue that's brought before the court. And then we discuss it, and we do help each other by our differences of opinion. We help one another shape what we think the final result of a court decision should be. So the differences that he sees, well, it's just his lack of experience as a judge that leads him in that direction.
Let's take a call from Dave in Menominee Falls. Hello, Dave.
Hi, good morning, Joy, and your guest. I just have a question. I understand. Thank you, Joy, for bringing up the choking incident in the chambers. I understand as far as that was between two other justices. But as some of the justices who were witnesses chose to recuse themselves, I was just wondering if your guest could explain her rationale for doing that. If that occurred in my workplace or in the average voter's workplace, there would be a lawsuit, and probably one person would be in jail and certainly fired from their position if she could explain how the justices are different from the average worker in a workplace. Thank you, and I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Well, I appreciate your question, and I share your concern about that incident. It's just absolutely heartbreaking. However, justices are required to remove themselves from a case when they are material witnesses. Okay, a statute says that. I'm expected to follow the law just like everyone else in the state is. In addition, the common law of the state of Wisconsin says that everyone deserves an unbiased, independent judicial decision maker. I physically separated those two people by putting my body between them and holding on to Justice Bradley until she calmed down. You know, I would not be an independent decision maker. That would not be fair to the parties that were involved in this. So I think the matter needs to be addressed. I've talked to my colleagues about addressing it. I do believe the court has the power to address it. But, you know, the Judicial Commission was never set up to handle an incident like the awful incident that occurred in June of 2011. But the matter will be dealt with, and once the election is concluded, I will try to get my colleagues back to talk about it again. I tried to start a conversation with them at the end of August last year, and I didn't get consensus, though there certainly was interest in trying to clear the decks with the public and make amends over that event. However, since June of 2011, now going on almost 2 years, there have been no inappropriate interactions between the justices. So we are working to act in the way the public has a right to expect someone to act who is in our position.
Our next caller is Dino in Madison. Hello, Dino.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Just wanted to ask Justice Rogensack if she would mind characterizing her personal relationship with Chief Justice Shirley Abrahamson. And I'll take her answer off the air. Thank you very much.
Well, she's someone that is really, really enjoyable to work with. I don't think anybody on the court loves the work of the court more than Chief Justice Abrahamson. I, too, love the work of the court. And when we work through issues in conference, she is always helpful to me. And I'm sure she would probably say the same thing about me. She studies the issues thoroughly. She's always open for discussion. So I think that we have a very good working relationship.
Another justice, but Justice Prosser made headlines as well during his campaign. I believe it came out that he had called Chief Justice Abrahamson the B word. How do you deal with this type of acrimony on the court?
You know, that happened in February of 2010. Justice Prosser is not up for election. Pat Rogensack is up for election. I don't use that kind of language. I don't get involved in physical altercations. You know, I would think that I should be judged fairly and independently on who I am and what I have done, just as people would like me as a judge to judge them fairly and independently on what they have done.
And in fact, you wanted the justices to sign a letter of apology to the public.
Well, you know, what I brought up was I wanted to discuss the court's inherent authority, and I suggested a letter by way of condemning the conduct, apologizing to the public, and reassuring the public that we were well aware of our responsibilities to them, and they could be assured that there would never be an incident like that occurred in June of 2011. I brought it up. I did research this summer, and then I brought it up in September, and I hoped that we could get together and talk about it. It didn't have to be my letter, but I was trying to open a conversation with my colleagues, and I think there was some interest in it. Then I got very busy with this election and with a full-time job, which I also have in addition to a statewide race, because my job doesn't slow down at all. I just haven't had the chance to get back to it. But I will get back to it after the April 2nd election. And I do think my colleagues also want to clear the decks with the public.
Well, we have another caller on, George in Rosendale. Hi, George.
Hi, thanks for taking a call. 1989, the law was changed to give fathers and mothers equal placement in divorces. In 2002, in front of the Supreme Court, you guys said that circuit courts should decide and not the legislature, and that was from Abraham's son writing that. Can you give equal placements when laws come in front of you? Can you reinforce the legislature and give fathers and mothers all over the state of Minnesota equal rights and placement at the same time? That's what I'm looking for, equal rights for men and women and equal placement for fathers and mothers.
Well, I think everyone comes before the court on equal footing. Our court doesn't discriminate between men and between women when they come before the court. I'm a little confused about equal rights for people all over the state of Minnesota, because I don't have any jurisdiction there, and I frankly don't know a whole lot about what the laws are like in Minnesota.
All right. You also expressed some concern that your challenger said that he would be a voice for the working people on the court.
Well, when you're a justice on the court, you don't represent any group at all. And to say you're trying to increase the voice of one side or another group is, I think, inappropriate, because you represent the rule of law. Now, you know, working families are pretty close to my own heart. My dad was a steel worker in the steel mills of Joliet, Illinois for 30 years. My mom taught school on a certificate and graduated from college when I was a junior in high school. So I know a little bit about working families myself, but I don't represent any group, nor should any justice.
Yeah, we have just a minute to go before we're done. Why should people vote for you on April 2nd?
Well, because, you know, really, an election is kind of like a giant job interview. We're interviewing all the public and asking them to hire us for the job of Supreme Court Justice. Well, like any job interview, you look at the experience of the candidates and decide which one has the better experience. And really, judicial experience is critically important to fully doing the job of a Supreme Court Justice. I've had almost 17 years of judicial experience. I've decided hundreds of cases. That's really critical in giving the public a full and fair review.
Thank you so much for being here. Justice Pat Rogan-Sack, candidate for Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice. This is the Ideas Network.